is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory,
oh,
glory, glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtapositioning us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground. The camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure.
Good morning. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know the voice already. It's Levin Miller. It's Wednesday, hump day Wednesday. Thank the Lord we've got two more days of this. And then it's Friday, right? And we go to doing things that we do on Fridays. Of course, 20 people at a time. That's how we do it, Mr. Prime Minister. We never do it more than 20 people at a time, I assure you. Take my word for it. I'm keeping a keen eye on all of the people that like to do it more than 20 people at a time. So there's no need to touch any of the restrictions. I see you say that there's no need. I concur with you. Let's just leave it just the way it is. And then maybe we could like take the curfew to 12 o'clock. I just putting that out there. You don't have to, you know, that's just an aside. So I've been preempting you since Monday that I wanted to talk a little bit about people that are in public life, particularly people that are in entertainment. And if you know any entertainers, you could please have them give me, not give me a call, but tune in. Because I wanna talk to them a little bit today. And of course, I'm inspired this morning by what has been happening in the media. I've been watching it surrounding the death of Earl Simmons. We all know him as Darkman X. Some people know him as DMX, right? And I sat there and I thought to myself, I said, it is amazing that I grew up as a child, born in the 80s, grew up through the 90s. And as I go back these days, of course, the luxury of the internet permits me the opportunity to watch a lot of the things that I did for entertainment in the 90s, that it kind of allows me to watch it on demand. And I think about the names. Chris Benoit died, drug overdose. The Randy Man Macho Savage died, drug overdose. Eddie Guerrero died, drug overdose, right? And then I go into people like Whitney Houston, died, drug overdose. Michael Jackson died, drug prescription overdose. And the line seems never to be skewed. It is a straight line somehow between success and the abuse of drugs, right? And you wonder what fuels it. And I think about even my own life as somebody in the public domain, as somebody that is in and around here making public pronouncements, and the demand that the public puts on people like myself to be able to perform all the time, no matter where I am, no matter what condition I am in. People want Levin Miller. They expect me to be Levin Miller every single time I show up. And I consider myself a nobody. Can you then imagine what it must be like or have been like for the Whitney Houstons and the DMXs? Whenever they show up, people want the dog, right? They want it. No matter what's going on in my personal life, they want the dog. No matter what, no matter the bank may have called me, they don't care. All they want is the, and they expected him to be the dog every single time he showed up, everywhere he showed up. And we never calculate the price of that demand. We never calculate the wear and tear on the entertainer of the price of that demand. What does it translate into? All right. And I watched an interview the other day. I'm going to play it for you right now. I watched the interview the other day with Rick Ross. He was a guest on the Steve Harvey Show, and he's talking about his new book, Hurricanes. And he said something that I found particularly interesting. He said that, you know, he realized that he had a difficulty with drugs, but his drug addiction came from a place of wanting to succeed. It was, I can't sleep. I don't have time to sleep. I'm putting in this work. If you got something in that cup that'll keep me awake, give it to me. If you got something in that blunt that'll keep me awake, give it to me. And so you find yourself doing that 3, 4, 5, 6 days in a stretch. You find yourself doing that 3, 4, 5, 6 days in a stretch for 4 or 5 years. And then you find yourself in a hospital with your mommy and your sister by your bedside. That's kind of how it ends. And it's not because you're a bad person. It's not because you're weak. It's because you're so busy chasing this success. You're so busy always trying to be Ross that you don't ever take time out to calculate what is the price on your own health. And then I also thought about the people that consume this entertainment, right? Like think in your mind. Walk with me back through your mind. WCW 1995, circa 95, 96, right? Could you not see that Randy Macho Man Savage was on coke? Like you could just look. If you think about it, the fella could barely stand still. If you look at the interviews, he's in an air-conditioned building. He's not been wrestling. He comes out here drenched in sweat and with the jitters. You could just look. You could just look and see the drug abuse. But we don't care. We want the Macho Man. Oh, yeah. That's what we want. And we pull until we pull these people right to the grave. And that is a sad thing. All right? So I want you to listen to this interview by Steve Harvey that he did with Rick Ross. I'm joined in studio this morning by Candy Gibson. We're going to talk about it a little bit. My numbers are 323-622-325-4316-325-4259. Let's talk about some of the things that people go through that take them down this road that all seems to end kind of the same way. The drugs, it typically wins. The interview from Rick Ross.
Yes. The thing about this man, in this book, man, you real candid, man. You just real honest, man, about everything about alcohol, drug abuse, man,
right,
about
right.
your seizures, your health
right.
issues from a couple of years ago, man. What would you say was the biggest contributing factor?
You know, what I would say the most is it really came from a positive spot. I know that's hard to say. But when you're really chasing success, you're really chasing your dream. There's something you've been doing over 20 years. You find yourself up in the studio. Everybody else fell asleep. You still up. Nah, I want to make this. I want to make this great. I want to make this. Pull me a little bit more of that. Come on.
Yeah.
Give me a little bit more of this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Let me hit this. All right, I got it. You know, and it really came from a positive spot. And I know that's hard to face sometimes, but that was me just really chasing my dreams and years of that. And when you find yourself waking up, you know, from a seizure or a coma and your doctor really telling you, when was the last time you slept 5 hours in a row?
Wow.
And I said, I couldn't tell you.
But it's hard though, Ross, because
it is.
Look, man, I think the average person has to understand that in order to be successful,
gotta go hard.
It requires right. such a massive effort.
Right.
It's not for the faint of heart. Just anybody finna hand you this money. I think the average person doesn't know, or I don't know if they're willing to do everything that it really requires to be successful.
A lot of times I think that's what separates the successful ones and the ones that don't succeed.
Mm.
A lot of times people that's, you know, become wealthy and successful, they want to make you into a genius when really it's not that.
Mm.
I may not be the brightest, but I outworked everyone
yeah.
that was in the room with me. And that's what it boiled down to a lot of times, a lot of occasions, real talk.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not to say, because I got in a lot of trouble on the internet, because I said rich people don't sleep 8 hours. And they go, oh, Steve prefers wealth over health. I don't. I want to be healthy. I want to live a long life, man.
I understand exactly where you come from with that statement. I understand how? Because it's a lot of nights you will not have 8 hours of sleep.
You just can't.
You know, what means the most to you? You accomplishing your dream. And it's not about the money. It's not about the dollar figures. Mm. It's accomplishing what you began, what you set out and started. You know, and if this makes the difference, these few hours of this dedication that I have, my doctor still calls me now.
See, that's what I'm saying. Where did that come from for you, Rick? Where did you get that drive, that all-out assault on everything?
Well, I really believe, you know, growing up in Miami, where I'm from, it's real easy to stay on this side of the tracks, not have nothing. The nicest car you see may be a clean Pontiac, heavy silicone on the tires. You go on this side of the bridge, you'll see a $10, $20 million home. And I never had envy. I never had jealousy. I never had hatred when I seen those homes. But what it did do was inspire me. What it did do was allow me to dream. That's what it most definitely did. And I understood for me and my position that I was standing in, I had to go hard. And that was the way I was going to separate myself. So I put, you know, on the easy day, 17, 18 hours in, easy.
Let me tell you something quick. I made $1 million. First time I made $1 million in 90. My manager at the time said, hey, man, you know you're a millionaire? And I was hustling so hard, I hadn't even thought about it. I had a million, $1,150. I took my staff to dinner, spent $2,000. Soon as the meal was over, he said, well, dog, you ain't a millionaire no more. I said, damn. Dog, that was the most short-lived. I went out and celebrated. He said, dog, you ain't a millionaire no more. You down to 998,000 now. I said, I'll be damned. That's how hard it is. Now you got to get back out on the grind.
At all times. At all times. And that's why I still consider myself a hustler.
I like that, man.
And so you hear the story of Rick Ross. Again, like I said, I mean, you know, just Candy Gibson basically saying, you know, I wasn't a bad person. I wasn't the people that you see who are just or have predispositions to drug use. No, I found myself hooked on drugs just chasing success. I've been out here rapping 20 years before it happened for me. And it happens, and you know, now you finally realize that the thing that I dreamt about all along is happening. I can't sleep 8 hours. You got something that can keep me up? Give it to me. Yeah. And so you do it and you do it and you do it until, boom, you end up in the news. You end up like X. You end up like Whitney. You end up like... And the question becomes like, how do we try as humans not to put that kind of pressure on people? Steve Harvey said, listen, I made $1 million in the 90s. I went out to dinner one night, and my manager told me, boy, that's the shortest-lived millionaire status in the world, right? And you are out there in public life, and everybody wants to be successful. Rick says, you know, I grew up in Miami. And if you ever been to Miami, you go into downtown Miami over by the river, you know that across the lake looks a whole lot different from Deadside, right? And you live on Deadside, and you dream every day about living across the lake. And you finally make it there. And then... You know, you try to maintain that. Like, what exactly are we not getting, Candy Gibson?
Well, first of all, we see people in the forefront. Mm-hmm. We don't know what demons they're fighting. Mm-hmm. You understand me? And some of us have, like, childhood traumas that we actually dealing with inwardly. Mm-hmm. So when we come to the forefront, people are saying, okay, the strong person, like, for instance, like Rick Ross, those people just saying music. Mm-hmm. He bottle, he dress up, or they say he's a Haitian, I think. I think that's what I probably heard when I listen to music. And then people are seeing him being successful. But mm-hmm. like he say, some days you don't even get that full hour sleep.
Right.
But people just want that music.
They want it.
You understand me? And they don't care what you doing behind the scenes to make them
to cause
happy.
It to happen.
You understand
yeah.
me? They just want performance, and that's where that's where we are now at as a society. You know, people just want that image, and mm-hmm. that's it. And then for you to maintain that image, that's a whole different lifestyle, a whole different ballgame altogether. Because he said, whatever was in their cup or whatever was they had, he knew it had to be something to keep him up for him to go there and jam, because at the end of the day, he don't know there.
Right.
You know, stories right now, he out of them. People won't hear from him, people won't see him.
Right. And so you know, you kind of can say, oh, well, you should set boundaries for yourself. You should, but you, again, you're somebody in the public life. You know, it's very easy to go from being the person that everybody loves
to the person that everybody
to
hates.
Being the person that everybody hates, yeah. And it's simply because all you're trying to do is take some time out for Candy Gibson, right? Like, I ain't trying to be stuck up, bruh. Today is a rough day for me. I just need some me time, and people ain't about to hear that. They expect if their son, brother, sister, if the dog get killed today, they anticipate Candy Gibson's going to show up. Notwithstanding, Candy's light might have been turned off this morning, right? They don't care. No, they want Candy Gibson. And if she doesn't show up, right?
They mad.
It's, well, how come she show up
for this person?
And can't, boy, that's how they go, right? And so now you never really know the pressure that you put on the people that are out there that are doing the things that, in most instances, are success, sure, but really they're doing it for you. Like I am using this thing to fuel myself to come out here and to fuel y'all like this, you know? And so, I mean, how can people like yourself, people like Ross, people like X, well, you know, now formally, like how do they go about drawing the line?
Sometime, Levin, they have never even a line drawn. Because he said he's still chasing success. He's still hustling. Mm-hmm. And it's time, so there's no line drawn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time, like you say, Steve Harvey said he once had $1 million. Mm-hmm. When he went out to dinner, he spent $2,000, so that $1 million came less than mm-hmm. now less. And mm-hmm. it's time, so when you get a certain standard, it's like you always just trying to maintain. But like, you just got to maintain, because at the end of the day, people see you out there, but it's a cost to be you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cost to be you. Like I was telling someone the other day, the bank ain't concerned, but my boyfriend got killed in 2015,
mm-hmm.
and I had to leave the country, so I wasn't here. Mm-hmm. The only thing they're concerned about, okay, guess what? You got a loan with us. You need to make the payment. BPL ain't concerned, oh, you was an activist, and you have people strangers living inside your house, and whatever. They're concerned is you're using their utilities, pay the bill. You understand mm-hmm. me? Mm-hmm. So people don't understand, like, there is you actually doing the best you can out there,
mm-hmm.
but they don't understand that blows you taking, you know, without the people.
Right, in your personal life.
They don't
understand. Because your personal life doesn't stop.
You understand me? Yeah. You understand? They don't understand that then, too. While you want to be strong for other persons, you have your children, too.
Right.
You understand? Yes, my friend, you speaking out saying, bad boys or young men, don't do this. Then you have a young man right in your house, all right? You know, you have a son too.
Right.
And you have nephews too, you know, someone mm-hmm. at errand. So people don't understand the fight you go through daily just being you. And because because the call of God in your life, people don't understand. It's time, so the trials coming, the warfare coming, people don't see you. But at the end of the day, like, people just saying, your pretty face, your pretty clothes, your pretty smart, your gold teeth, your braids. They don't understand what you're going through. They don't know mentally, like, how hard it is for you to actually come with your bed every morning and let and God allow your foot to touch the ground. They mm-hmm. don't understand that.
Yeah. I watched the video that you posted on Facebook, and you talked about people that had struggles that they dealt with and, like, dealt with in their past. And, you know, you see them out there performing, and you really don't know how much their past is actually affecting them, right?
And then first thing people say is, get over it.
Right.
Okay, it might have happened 5 years to you, or 10 years to you, or 15 years to you. But to me, who live in that happened like it just happened yesterday.
Right.
In my mind, that just happened yesterday.
Right.
And so my thing about it, like, I saw people, don't never tell nobody get over nothing you have yeah. never walked through.
Yeah.
Because if you have not had two brothers murdered and a lover murdered and right in front of your eyes, how you could relate to me?
Yeah.
How you could tell me what not to not to hold on to? If you like, that reminded me the other day when I was talking to Apostle Reed, and I said, Apostle Reed, and I said, something, he said, man, Candy, you could let that disturb your dad disturb you. Man, you done being betrayed on the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
You done being betrayed by those who's supposed to, you understand me? Mm-hmm. And you can let this little trivial thing get you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was then my mind opened, Candy, you done being betrayed on the highest level. So nothing, nobody in this point right now could do to you should even make you bow or bend.
And sometimes it goes all the way back to childhood, though. And, like, again, you know, you're out in the public sphere. People, particularly when you live in small societies, right? Because there's really nowhere for you to go and decompress and be Candy, not Candy Gibson, just Candy, right?
Yeah.
Most times you have to stay home to do that kind of stuff. And people don't get that, right? Like, you don't get to, I see people aspire towards public office in this place, right? And I tell people all the time, it must be the call of God that continues to push me in or towards politics, because I can tell you right now, I prefer to be a ghost. I really would just rather be the guy in the gray shirt in the corner in the dark, right? But somehow my life just isn't doing that. And it's because this society is so small, right? That you don't ever get to not be in character. You don't ever get to not be who you are publicly. And people say, oh, well, you sound like you're living a double life. I have to live a double life. Because if you knew the struggles I really have, you would kill yourself. And then I'm going to feel bad about that, right? Yeah. So X says, listen, I didn't introduce myself to drugs. I was a 15-year-old boy whose mommy was abusing him. Met a guy that introduced me, that recognized I had a voice and a talent, mm-hmm. and introduced me to the thing that's made me the most money in my life. But also, one day, we sitting down, writing music. The fella rolls a blunt. I had never smoked marijuana. I had never drank alcohol. I had never done anything at this point in my life. And I hit the blunt, and this thing takes me into, like, fairy tale world, only for me to then discover later on that the guy had actually laced the marijuana with crack cocaine, right? And I remember a conversation, or I remember, I think, a course I did, because, you know, I'm ex-law enforcement, right?
Right.
And they talked about one of the difficulties with the drug trade, the marijuana trade now, is the way it is being transshipped, right? So they move the marijuana with cocaine, with other heroin and that kind of stuff. And a lot of times you have what is called cross-contamination of the drugs, right? And so a lot of times you see people on the streets, or you see young men that are becoming delusional and losing their head, and you say, well, man, marijuana don't do you like that. Marijuana shouldn't do you like that. But the truth is it really just marijuana? Like, they have these contaminated strains of marijuana that have been contaminated through the trafficking process with heroin, And so you look at people around you and you wonder to yourself, well, I wonder, you know what I mean? Like I wonder, how did he get here? But the truth is, he, she, they may be victims of a trade or victims of a substance that they didn't necessarily introduce themselves to. And that is something I think we have to always take into consideration when we perceive people and their addictions, right? Like I spoke to a good friend of mine yesterday, Chef Hall, and I told him, I said, we talk about addictions as if it's something that's so terrible, right? I really like monsters.
I see that.
I really do, right? And do you know, I find myself, when I'm in a particular area of Nassau, figuring out how I'm going to pass the store that I know that they sell them at. Like, I'm going downtown, but I plot a map in my head that I'm sure is going to take me past this shop because I know they're going to be there when I get there. And we don't identify those things as addictions, but that is very well a sign of an addiction. And this is something that is less chemically altering of my mind, right? But could you imagine me, who is very much in charge of many facets of my own life, not being able to get around that? Then imagine somebody with less wherewithal, with a greater public presence than me, right? That has to reach for something that kind of keeps them fueled. And like, how do you escape it? How do you get past it? When you're the entertainer that has to get up on stage 5 nights a week, and people don't care. They come here to rake and scrape. They don't care. They ain't care. Bring it when you come, right? And you need something to kind of fuel the you that they've come to see, because they didn't come to see you. They come to see the presence that is you. And it appears to be a vicious cycle, Gandhi. And I'm very much interested in starting the conversation of how do we sensitize the public to that kind of a cycle?
How do we? I can't even say sensitize. Like, I tell persons daily, I can't judge nobody,
mm-hmm.
because everybody out here basically doing what they gotta do to get by.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they ain't let you see what they doing behind the closed door. People doing what they gotta do. And mm-hmm. some people drink, some people smoke, some people at the pot. And some people do their bodies, everybody doing what they got to do to get by. So I can't judge nobody.
Mm.
Like, I guess a person, all of us got to go to God for ourselves. And that's where I am now, you know. And even like with DMX, you know, as you can see, like, even DMX, know God, love the word, you know, could pray, and I even listened to one of his prayers the other day. You know, he said, like, and his prayer was like, God, I'm like, help me to understand your love, because your love is so unconditional. Like, mm-hmm. help me understand your love, because you gave me some people supposed to love me, but they took their love back. Mm-hmm. But here it is, you love me in spite of. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we basically are as a society. But, like, some people, like, even, like, I was looking at the other day, and I was thinking about it. When I heard his prayer, I was like, you know, you have people out here really broken, Levin. Mm-hmm. Broken, you have people who mothers had them and gave them for adoption. That's a sign of resentment. They probably still battling. And yes, they still putting up, but my mommy gave me away and my daddy never checked. You mm-hmm. have children who are being molested. My daddy was supposed to protect my uncle, my big brother, my cousin, but they took away my innocence. Mm-hmm. You understand me? Mm-hmm. So much people out there hurting. How do you tell them, just get over it? You have husbands walk out their wife. Why walk out their children? You have so much thing. You have just so much. You have brothers kill brothers. You just so much people going around here just full of hurt. And we just think that, just tell them, get over it. It's okay. That's why I tell people, Levin, if you know Selassie, you know Jehovah, you know God, whoever you get your source of strength from, mm-hmm. that's who you lean to. Mm-hmm. You understand me? That's who you must lean to.
So do you then believe though that, like, we as the public, right, whenever we are in positions of being the consumer, right, like, do we have an obligation to ensure that we do not do that to people? Like, what do I mean? I mean, all of us have something that we enjoy, someone that we enjoy, right? Again, like I said, I go back now and I watch wrestling all the time. And it is because, and I watch wrestling for a completely different reason now. Like, now I know it's all fake, right? Mm-hmm. But it's because literally I watch it and I think to myself, how did we miss that this guy was on a substance, you know? Or did we not miss it and we simply did not care? As long as he came out here as the Canadian crippler, Chris Benoit. Like, there were times, like, sometimes I watch, because I watched, like, 95, 96 wrestling, around the time mm-hmm, I would have been watching mm-hmm, it as a child. You could look in Chris Benoit's eye. Like, when he would stare into the camera, you could look in this man's eye and see that there is something in there that is not Chris Benoit. But we loved it. And he's sitting in an arena with 30, 40,000 people screaming his name. And quite honestly, like, can he come out here without that substance and be the Canadian crippler? He probably cannot. Nope. So, I mean, how do you, for people that are in that are in the light, how do they balance it? Like, how do you ensure that this thing doesn't push you so hard that it breaks you? My daddy always used to say, remember, you only got one you. Don't let them kill that one, right? And that's easy to say. It is easy to say, oh, set boundaries, set times of operation. Don't let people call you at 9 o'clock in the night. Don't. But I'm sure you, as somebody that help people with right now problems, when people call Candy Gibson, they have a right now problem, right? How do you tell the woman that calls you 11:30 in the night and tells you six of her children just get kicked outside? How do you tell her, well, my operating hours are between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m., baby. Call me back 9. It's easy to say. But when you have a desire to do what it is that you do, when you are who you are, and I'm telling you a lot of times, life chooses it for you. Like, this is not necessarily something that you would like to be doing, right? But somehow your life just chose this for you. And so you feel the pull to do it, right? And I think the same is to be said with people that are in the secular world, people that are in the religious world. I cringe when I think about what it must be like to be a prophet around this place, right? Because I have to prophesy to you Sunday and then go and supervalue with you on Monday. And if the prophecy I give you Sunday was spot on, when you see me Monday, you don't care if God talking to me or not. You want a word from the Lord. You you anticipate that I should just be able to call a word down, right?
Yeah.
And that ain't really the way prophecy does work.
Yeah.
But imagine the demand on the prophet, right? Like, who has to live among the people that he prophesies to? And, like, how do you encourage people that are in the arena that people like you are in not to be overtaken by it?
Boy, I could say, like I say, Lev, again, that's easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you have people calling you hours of the night with their issue, and sometimes, you know, you have battered women, abused women calling you, they're in a situation, you understand me? You have to actually tell them, okay, ma'am, if you could get someone to say, like, I can't move right now, like right now I wouldn't move. If you could get someone to bring you, I could have you here for a night, and we'll go to the police station in the morning. Mm-hmm. You understand me? At the end of you bringing this person in your personal space, you don't know if who they're trying to run away from. You don't know who they're trying to get away from. You don't know if they're going to come to your house and do you in or mm-hmm. hurt you. You understand mm-hmm. me? So it's be a situation where sometimes you actually take things on, like not really thinking. But just because your heart and your compassion allow you to help persons, you actually take things on, like, and you don't really be aware of what you take on until, okay, then you see, okay, the next step happens afterwards. So it can't even say there's a balance. But what I try to do now is, my daughter's now 14. Mm-hmm. You understand me now? When she's a little younger, it was okay. She's now 14. She know what it's like now to look at sexy stuff on Facebook and see the girls them dancing and wearing this and wearing that. She now knows like to talk to boys. Mm-hmm. So now my eyes in, look at the people, my eyes look at her now because I don't want to walk the road I walk through.
Okay.
You understand me? So now it's a balance now. When it's a time, that's it. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I'm sorry. I don't care what the problem is out there. Like I said, people call, this is my daughter. I have to deal with her because right. at the end day, when your life done pass on, y'all when y'all done come overcome whatever you're going through right now, my daughter's still here.
Right.
So my time now, when my son come, now I ain't lying. I do cuss my son. You know,
you gotta like, cuss him.
Yeah. When I turn to Kirk Franklin sometimes,
you gotta cuss them. That's the best way to do it.
You know. Mm-hmm. And so when he say, "Mom, and talk to you," I have to stop what I'm doing. Uh-huh. When I see a WhatsApp message come, because you know, a lot of people's sons. Even here no more.
Right.
So mine says, so when he say, hey, morning, mommy, don't care what I doing, don't care where, hey, what's up, babes, you all right? Mm-hmm. Mommy love you. What's going on? You tell me, I want to talk to mommy, where you is? I say, yeah, okay, I want me come to you, or whatever. So I stop what I doing immediately, and I run to my children. Mm-hmm. My nephews, them, nieces, them, especially the ones whose father got murdered, them, that's my first preference. You mm-hmm. understand me? So I make sure myself is available to them. Once they to a good space or a good position, then I could now function. Mm-hmm. You understand me? And that's like my staff too. Once my staff to a good place mentally, I walk in an office and I see Bianca face the office manager face down or another staff member down. Hey, everything good? No, it's what's happening. Because if they face down and they in 100%, then they can't give the clients 100%. Mm-hmm. You understand me? Richard, when I come in there, like I was working at Patelco, and we had this manager, his name was Mr. Franklin Wind at the time. Mm-hmm. When he busts up there, he's like, huh? The light has come. You know what? Oh, hey, showtime. Uh-huh. And so, where don't care whatever position I in or whatever, however I feel, once I show up, yeah. showtime. You yeah. know?
It's prime time.
Yep, the body is here.
It's prime time.
Let me have it. Yeah. You understand me? So, that's how I now position myself. That one of my friends called me today, and he's like, Candy, how you really feeling? And I said, I say, good, you know. He said, no. And his message to me was, don't tell me you good. Can you always say that? I say, right, I have being so programmed to say I'm good, but I'm not good. Mm-hmm. That when I'm good, I'm good.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah. And people like yourself. People like I tell people all the time, right? There's only one way to be the champ. I all my friends that know me will tell you, oh yeah, just call the champ, right? And I tell them that is how I face life. I don't get to bellyache about it. I don't get to kafetch and roll over on the ground. What do you want me to do? Tear off all my clothes and roll over naked?
Never.
That's not gonna help anything, right?
Never.
Right. Like I gotta get out there and fix it. But you never stop. You never stop and calculate the wear and tear. Like I tell people, when my father died, my grandmother died a year before, my other grandmother died 6 months after that. I never calculated like the wear and tear emotionally on my life. I'm talking about three of the pillars of my life, right? If you know me very well, you know that I'm a grandmother's boy. Everyone that knows me knows that. Like if you won't get to me, call Joyce. Joyce can call me, and I don't care if I was mad as a T-Rex. When Joyce call, it's yes, Grammy. All right. And so I went through all of that. Came here and did radio every single day, and sometimes did radio twice a day.
Right.
Because I understand that there are people that will turn on their radio, and if I'm not there at 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock or 7 o'clock or whatever time they anticipate that I will be there, I have now thrown their life out of cycle or out of loop. Because people rely on that consistency. And what we don't ever consider is that a human is providing that consistency. But we never really figure out what is fueling the human, right? And you try as best as you could to be as consistent with the product as possible. Because, of course, that is also where success is made, right? Like you got to come out here every day and do it exactly the same way in order for success to happen. I used to work for a producer who used to say consistency over time. That's how we'll get to success, right? And that comes at a price. That comes at not being able to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning. Why? Because I didn't have a show plan all day, but boom, something hits me at 3 and or something happens in the news and I gotta be on top of it. Why? Because that is where it happens. And so people say, oh, you really should get more sleep. No, I don't get to complain. I got to get up and I got to go out there and I got to fight it and I got to win. Because that's kind of how we do it. If somebody gets murdered right now while we're on air, when we get off of here, you probably got to scotch some things off your calendar because Candy Gibson on the way. And I hope this show today is about a sobering reality for the people that are out there in public life. And you said something just now that actually kind of pricked me a bit. You know, you talked about having your children. And if you grew up in the 90s, you would know that people always said, oh, preacher's children are the worst. Well, as the grandson of a bishop, let me tell you what I've witnessed, right? My granddaddy had 18 children, about 64 grandchildren, all with his one wife, sure, right? But I remember all of my granddaddy's children being home, and he got to go to the station because Sister Mary, son, lock up. You understand what I'm saying? And this one, husband throw them outside, and that one, wife going crazy and trying to kill the whole family, right? And a lot of the times we would turn around and look for my granddaddy, and he wouldn't be here. Not because he was a bad daddy, but because he was operating in an office that required him. And that is something that I think all of us struggle with. Because I see a text right here saying, hey, Levin, you said DMX was a good person. He had 15 children with 9 women. Well, my granddaddy got 29 with 6. my non-bishop granddaddy, because I got a bishop granddaddy and then a very non-bishop granddaddy, right? But he was the greatest granddaddy ever seen.
Yeah, people on the planet, always actually. Basing people on their personal life. All of us fall short of the glory of God. All of us have sinned. Mm-hmm. Nobody's perfect, Levin. All of us fall. Like, okay, so what? He could have 100 women. That doesn't make it doesn't change who he was. He was DMX. You understand? Mm-hmm. He's a young man. He's a young man, just like many of us.
Sure.
Have broken and struggling with issues, but still to the forefront, pushing daily. We love God, we know the word, but at the end of the day, we still broken.
Yeah.
He's just a man. Yeah. Like Morgan Heritage say, a man is just a man. Mm-hmm. Whether he wear necktie or he walk barefoot, only difference if he is good or evil.
Yeah.
And that's just it, you understand me? And so, like I say again, people quick to throw your past, throw your personal life in your face. You still human.
Mm-hmm.
All of sin and fall short of the glory of God. You're still human.
Yeah.
You understand me? Like you say, when people run for public office, how it is to compare when you're simple. Like there's no, there got to be a balance somewhere. You understand me? And there's never balance. Once you're out to the forefront, there's your whole life now becomes public.
Is on camera.
You understand me? Your whole life becomes public. You understand me? But me, like when my son made me mad, I don't care if my life, I don't care if the neighbors hear me cuss him. At least the neighbors know I don't stand for foolishness. You understand me? So y'all could hear me cuss him. And then when I finish cussing him, I put on my clothes and go to phone me, ask the phone, how can I help you?
Yeah.
The other day, he cussed me, he said, mommy, where did the people say the president of form cussing like this? I said, no, they'll say her son calls a cuss. That's what they'll say, you know?
Yeah, they say he was a no-manners boy.
You understand me? Some people had to drive the woman because that woman's a Christian woman, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever the case is. So you know, it's just like trying to have a balance. But once you're in the forefront, there's never no balance. Your life is now open. Like even like certain stuff I would wear, I don't wear because my life is in the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the president of form wearing. And that too, when I dress up, when I go, certain stuff I would wear, I don't wear no more because if a murder happened, I have to stop and immediately go to that scene.
Mm-hmm.
So I always make sure I dress in appropriate attire or whatever the case is. At the end of it, I have to, something happened, sudden, I have to run and leave.
Let's take some phone calls. 323-622-3254-316-325-4259. You can text me, 422-4796. I'm joined in studio with the president of FOAM, Family of All Murdered Victims, Candy Gibson. And we're talking today, you know, we're talking about the price you pay to be the public figure, like the what is the cost? What is the absolute cost? I learned this from His Lordship, Sir Michael Barnett. He taught me this, that economics has a basic principle. It's called Tanstaffel, and it means that there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. You will either pay at the front end or at the back end, but nothing is free. Everything you see generated, everything you see created, everything you see distributed has a cost. And so we must always calculate what is the cost. So you say, okay, the entertainer is a great entertainer. Yes, he comes on stage, he has a wonderful stage presence, but what is the price of that presence? You say, FOAM is doing a wonderful job, Candy Gibson is always present, but what is the cost of that ability? You know what I mean? And you never calculate it. And you also, if you listen to Rick Ross, you never calculate how achieving this one thing over here causes you to kind of have a shortfall in this thing over here. So yes, I sell 200,000 albums my first week of release. Yes, I have 9 best-selling albums, sure. But
that was all at the price of laying in a hospital bed for 5 days in a coma, unconscious, because I had taken too much prescription medication and not been sleeping, not been eating, you know what I mean? And then, of course, if you go further on in the interview, you'll hear he said, so now what he's decided to do is be better at investing, all right? So he owns a couple of wing stops, and he bought the largest piece of real estate in the city of Florida with the largest indoor pool, residential pool ever made, right? Yeah. And now he's kind of using that to generate his income.
Right.
So it's not about going in the studio and putting in a 7-8-hour day anymore. It's not about trying to make the next hot album, because he has enough music. And public life does that for you at some point. At some point, you kind of have enough of the success,
right?
But that doesn't happen today. It doesn't happen tomorrow. If you listen to Rick, he says it took him 20 years to get to there, right? And so people, again, will say, because I see somebody here is messaging me and saying, well, okay, you as the public figure have to set a boundary for yourself. And I get that, but can I set these boundaries while I am working on the success? Or do I get the success and then kind of set the perimeter? And Rick lives in a city where there's about, I don't know, almost 100 million people, right? In Nassau, when I set the boundary and the people walk up to me in City Market, I don't get to say, hey, you can't talk to me right now, the boundary is set. No, because you know what that'll do? In this very small society, it'll crumble every single thing I work for.
That's like saying, okay, me and my daughter go out. Every time we go out, 11, people always stop me. Candy, mom, can my baby say, mommy, we can never go nowhere. People not stop and talk to. Mommy, can I have my mommy for one day? I said, baby, I am so sorry. This the life God called me to. You understand me? And so sometimes I feel bad too, because when I with her, people stopping me and people hailing me, they want to share something with me or something like that. And I have to put her on hold because people actually have stuff they want to share with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then too, when you don't get a certain just so you don't get certain stuff, people would hate you and be jealous of what you accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't see the blood, sweat, and tears mm-hmm. you doing performing.
Mm-hmm.
Like in 2015, I took a serious fall in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came back home, Levin, mm-hmm. I was just 11. I came back home with my mind make up a success.
Mm-hmm.
You understand me? So nights when people be sleeping, I was up.
Yeah.
You understand me? Trying to figure out, what do I do next? How do I
move it?
What do I do? You understand me? Do I stay in and stay with people's mm-hmm. house and walk up with sheet and towel mm-hmm. over my head? Or do I come back home, do my video and face the demon
mm-hmm.
and face whoever, what they said right. they do, face it. You understand me? So when I came back home, my thing was, guess what, Candy? There's a demon you have, babe. You understand me? You like in isolation, like, I went to Canada for 18 months. I served 18 months, like, in this guy was in jail
right.
because I was away from my family, okay? So I come back home, I said, buddy, guess it is what it is. You understand me? I come back home, I home, I free.
Mm-hmm.
You understand me? Candy, get your thing on, share your video. Ask how you feel, buddy, because I coming forward my story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who believe me, don't believe me. This my story. This what transpired. Anybody who rebuked it, that on them. Mm-hmm. But this my story.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I came back home, I'm angry, like, that was a demon I faced, you know, because just a DMX, DMX battling. Every day, and can I get up? I would talk to Mary, you know. When I come back home, I tell her my story. And my story got to be heard, you understand
mm-hmm.
me? So when I came back home and I told my story, I'm going to tell you a word, like, I overcame that demon.
Mm-hmm.
You understand me? And even though I overcame that demon with me personally, you still have some people will think, oh, she's bad news. Or like one day, I say something to one guy, oh, what do you do? You can send a headache. You understand me?
Mm-hmm.
And I ain't gonna lie. I get stupid. I say, you're effing right. Right church, wrong pew. You understand me? It's just a troll out of me.
Yeah.
You understand me? But I was joking.
Yeah.
But I said, it says, that's how people see you. You understand
right.
me? And want a stigma on you. But I don't care what you people can always see you
mm-hmm.
as what that stigma say. And when you try to clear yourself or speak your truth or tell the truth what happened, far as I'm concerned, people rather believe lies than the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You understand me? So my whole life is now like when I came back home, I was like trying to prove the people wrong. I no killer. I set up nobody. Nah, I don't right now, I don't give a hell.
Mm-hmm.
Think how you wanting but me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jesus came for our sins and people want Barabbas. So who's Candy Gibson?
Mm-hmm.
So now when I walk out now, I just want to prove this person wrong, gone to school, gone to UB, doing this, doing that, to prove people, like, but I ain't no killer, but I ain't set up nobody, but 11, I don't care no more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You can, your perception of me can be your perception of me no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
My only concern now is how God see me, and guess what? He said, our best filthy ride. So there's still a lot of me working on. I ain't perfect, you understand me? So 11, you're beyond people now.
Yeah. Somebody here says, good morning, absolutely love this topic. The difference with DMX and Rick Ross and Whitney Houston are their status. The more successful you are, the more spotlight shine on you, and it becomes that much harder to live life freely in the public.
Your focus now is protecting your privacy because the struggles faced behind closed doors are often not acceptable or the most moral thing. The pressures of being in a place of influence. Candy is right. My daughter demands her time from me. She tells me straight, tell my students, you have a real daughter. No phone calls and no counseling.
Thank you.
They go on to say, people don't care. I learned the hard way in church. When my mom was moved, I lost my job and I was dealing with my daughter. Pastor didn't care what I was feeling as long as I was showing up to prayer meeting. All right. Another text. Let's take this call. Good morning, caller. You're on.
Morning, Mr. Miller.
How are you?
Very well. Good morning, Ms. Gibson.
Good morning.
First of all, you need to understand that particularly in the life of high-profile people or celebrities,
mm-hmm.
they perceive themselves as the product.
Mm.
The first thing that has to happen is you have to separate yourself from your product.
Mm.
As an artist, you bear your soul to your audience.
Okay.
You let them look inside you and you express your cultural expressions and your creative thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to be believable, you have to be sincere about what they are. And so you begin to believe that you are the essence of what they are experiencing. So when you are on stage and you hear the audience screaming and hollering, you perceive that as success. When you see them not receptive, you take that as you are failing as a person, as opposed to you maybe just having a bad night.
Mm-hmm.
Most artists, when they go on stage, they need to be stimulated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that stimulation could come from within, or you could use some other substance to cause you to believe that you are putting on the best show of your life.
Mm-hmm.
I know some artists can't even go on stage unless they have a particular substance.
Right.
And I actually know artists who, while they are performing, they have to leave stage to get even more of the substance in order to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And I've experienced this over the years. So the first thing I would like to suggest is that you have to separate yourself, who you are, from what you do.
This sounds like Mr. Munnings to me. So I know that you have been around the business for a long time. And the question I want to ask you, because I feel like you've seen a lot of it. Like, how though? Because, you know, you say people are screaming while you perform. You are very correct. They're screaming my name. So you could say I'm not the product, but they're out here calling for me.
You are the product when you are on stage. You see? The difference between you and another item
mm-hmm.
or material item is you, wherever you go, you are the product.
Mm-hmm.
So when you appear in the food store and someone sees you and recognizes you, then you must be that person who they see when you're on stage.
Correct.
So you are always have this duplicity or this dual personality. When I'm around my family, I conduct myself a certain way. The minute I step out into the street,
mm-hmm.
I am now Fred Munnings.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different persona.
Mm. I know a preacher, Mr. Munnings,
yeah.
Very notarized preacher who says he doesn't go anywhere unless he's completely dressed. He doesn't care what the emergency is.
That's correct.
And this whole thing was, I took 40 years to build ministry.
Absolutely.
If and people and see me a certain way,
Yeah. No matter what's going on in your life,
correct.
They want you to give them that same image
mm-hmm.
that you give them and you make them feel good and holler and scream while you're on stage.
Mm.
My father always told me that you have to separate yourself from your personality and understand that when you are off that stage, you are a different human being because that's really not you there.
Mm.
It's called show business. Is to create a fantasy. And like you said, whenever you walk on that stage, they expect, no matter what, you could have just lost your mother. And I remember my dad one time, he got a message that his mother had died. He was at FAMU putting on a concert.
Mm.
And he had to still go out on that stage and perform.
What about the entertainers, Mr. Munnings, that that say they do it for success? I saw an interview with Lil Wayne, and he talked about why he stopped writing lyrics, right? And he said he had a number one best-selling album, right?
Right.
came out about a year later and dropped his second album that he had taken so much time writing.
Right.
And it flopped. The whole thing went belly up, right? Didn't even make back studio money off of it.
You know, I tell people all the time, record companies and production companies make hits.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you heard a piece of music that you say, boy, that's lousy, but that may be one of the biggest hits ever.
Mm.
Because hits are created.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Back in the day, we used to have A&R people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about airplay and exposure.
Okay.
The more you could have the best song in the world, but if nobody hears it,
it's nothing.
It's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying you may hear some of the most lousy music and lyrics in the world, but it may be the greatest hit that someone may have.
Yeah.
And so we got to also, it's all about a business, man. And you could write some of the most beautiful music, or you could write the most beautiful poetry, and it doesn't go anywhere. It also depends on timing.
Timing. Yeah.
I mean, today's artists, it seems as though I haven't released any music in a number of years because I don't think that my particular brand of music would have been accepted, nor would I have been able to recoup the kind of investment. And you know, you put your music out there today and you really don't make any money off of the recordings anymore. What you do is most of the music could be downloaded free.
Yeah.
So all it does is create a demand for you, and so you really make money from live performances now.
Okay.
And virtual.
And a lot of that is fueled by Substance.
Hmm?
A lot of those live performances are fueled by Substance, because this ain't the studio. You now have to go there and push people's physical body.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is, it depends on how you market yourself. It depends on what your particular style or brand is. And so when I listen and I hear rap music, or I hear pop music, or I hear rock music, there's a market for that. That's why the music is popular.
Yeah.
The particular brand, or you have great music, like, for example, the Marvin Gaye's or the Luther Vandross, that will be on forever, because when you talk about a particular substance like love and relationship,
mm-hmm.
I don't care who you are, that's going to be relative.
Yeah.
Follow me. So again, it's all about understanding the business, but it's a great topic.
Thank you very much,
sir. I think you need to have more of these conversations, because, and like you say, many of our great artists, because they could not deal with the fact that they are not reaching that level of satisfaction in terms of their gratification for what they do,
mm-hmm.
they take their own lives.
Thank you very much, Mr. Munnins.
Get rid of the pain.
Appreciate you for calling. Candy, we're almost flat out of time, right? So I appreciate that call from Mr. Munnins, by the way. I didn't know it was a really good call. In case you don't know, that's the voice of Freddie Munnins. He's been a musician for as long as I've had memory. And, you know, he says it very, very clearly. Like, you know, people that are in public life or on public platforms have to understand that the product isn't just you. Like, so you have to create something that isn't. And I think that's the same thing Rick Ross was trying to say. Like, you've already allowed yourself to create something. Now let's see if we can get that something to generate the success that you're looking for, so that you don't have to continue to push your body. And I think that's the same thing Mr. Munnins is saying, and it's a very salient message. As we get ready to get out of here, Candy, we know that you're from Form. Make sure you give us some contacts before you leave, and give us your last 30 seconds.
Okay, my last 30 seconds would be, persons be you. Don't let nobody tell you get over nothing, okay? Mm. Don't let nobody even tell you, oh, let it go. No. Grieving. No, just allow God to heal you.
Mm.
Because someone telling you get over it isn't healing.
Yeah.
No, just be you. Just be you. You don't have to put on no show for nobody. Just be you.
Yeah.
Just be you. And so that's where I'm at. And right now, today's not even about form. Today's about a lot of persons walking around broken, just like DMX.
Yeah.
Understand me? But don't let whatever demon you're fighting get the best of you and take you out.
Give us your numbers before we get out of here.
My number is 424-8953.
All right. You've been listening to Levin Miller. I've been Unleashed on your radio. Thank you so much for letting me be with you. I don't know what you people do at 11 o'clock, but I'm happy that you did what you did do with me while you were doing it. I'm Levin Miller. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Don't move. They're your station for fresh news and smart talk. So they've got the news. It's up next.